Yeah.
There we go. And our way is two. But all right. Anyway, the talk tonight is on the church. It's on, I guess, kind of based loosely off of a lesson I heard on accident from Paul Earnhardt. I listened to one of his lessons. It was on just Christ, and then the next one was on the church. Calls it the church. A hotel or hospital? I think it's a hotel for saints and a hospital for sinners. Something like that. Anyway. And it's a really interesting lesson. And I think that you can go and you can listen to it online, look at the outlines, things like that, to help all of us. You know, last class we discussed the idea of the need to just wake up. You know, we need to wake up to righteousness, because what kind of world do we live in? Is it like a pretty light world, pretty bright and godly world? No, not really, is it? It's kind of a world of sin, but it's been like that since sin entered the world, okay? There's nothing new. This world is about sin. So we discussed the idea of needing to wake up, trying to think like God thinks. And that's crazy sometimes, but to even imagine we could have that, but it's true. In Isaiah we read, you know, God's ways, His thoughts, they're higher. They're much higher, okay? Well, let's try to see how God would have us to live, how God would have us to think. First, we got to wake up, and we got to wake up to righteousness, and we got to do things like putting on Christ, things like that. The topic tonight is on the church. Really, it's just a specific way that I think we need to wake up and we need to start thinking the way God would have us to. I want to start with a question. Where do you go to relax and just get away from everything? Just get away from all the cares of life. Where do you go?
My bed.
Bed? Go to sleep, yeah? Okay. Where else?
The woods.
The woods? Just go be by yourself a little bit? Something like that? Away from it, all the cares of school, things like that. Where else?
Driving?
Huh?
Driving.
Yeah, just, I mean, I find a lot of comfort sometimes from just driving. You said driving, right? Okay. That's what I was thinking. So, anyway. Yeah, that's good. Anything else? What about, have you ever heard someone in a prayer while at church say, you know, as we leave this place and we go out to the world, the ideas like that, or maybe, thankfully, let's have this place where we can come, we can be with one another, things like that. It is a blessing that we have so many Christians. We say like precious faith. It really is a precious faith. And the fact that we have that in common with one another, it's awesome. But I feel that ideas like that may have affected us in a negative way. Because we think that go to church, a place to get away from everything, right? You don't have to worry about work. You don't have to worry about school. You don't have to worry about anything. You just go. So you can relax, right? Kick your feet up, just relax. Like a hotel, something like that. I don't think that's how we're supposed to look at it. Let's see. I think that when we have that idea, maybe in our heads, we're kind of thinking that Satan can't, or maybe he's not trying to tempt us while we assemble with the saints. Do you think that Satan tries to tempt you while you're assembling with the saints? I mean, but we're away from the world, right? That's our place where we go to relax. Why would Satan try to tempt us in those places?
Because you have your guard let down in your church.
Right. Just an idea to think about. Going to church, going to be with the Lord's people doesn't mean Satan's not going to try to tempt you. That could be the place you are tempted most, because your guard is down a little bit.
Like we were talking about this morning, not letting your mind wander and not think about what you're supposed to be thinking about during worship.
Right. Almost gets to the point where, I mean, we'll talk about this in a second. The idea of growing up in the church, you grow up doing these things, you grow up being there, and what happens when, you know, you're out on your own and your mom and dad isn't sitting there telling you to do this, or, you know people are looking at you. Well, we kind of just daydream a little bit, you know? I mean, we're there. I mean, that's what we're used to doing, is just being there. And I don't think that's right. Do we think that inside the building that we meet in, it's all light, and outside those four walls, it's darkness? Is that how we think? I mean, the closing prayers, sometimes that's how we say. I've done it too. Say, as we go out into the dark world, you know, go out of this light, you know, because we're in such a great place right now. There is no darkness. That's not true. What is the church made out of? Made of
Christians.
It's made up of sinners, isn't it? Sinners that have been saved. So, who's to say that there isn't a little bit of darkness in that, in the four walls of the assembly, in here right now? I'm not trying to say there's horrible people. I'm just saying, I mean, sinners. That's what makes up the church. We forget that, though. We think it's the people. It's the people who are called out. It's the blessed people. Those are the people who make up the church. So we can kick back and relax a little bit, right? I don't think that's right. I really think that we need to change our focus a little bit. Like I said, there's great encouragement and comfort when we're around followers of Christ who are in the same war, same battle that we are in. There's such a great comfort. I mean, I'm encouraged by having everyone here tonight. I mean, and that's the same. Oh, that's the same no matter where you are. No matter what college class you go to, it's an amazing opportunity to be with followers of Christ. I don't see, did Paul want to go see the people who he had visited, go back and see them? Don't we see that? But why did Paul want to go back and see the people who he had visited? Like people in Thessalonica and things like that. For whose benefit?
For theirs.
For theirs. Let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. First Thessalonians 2, and I think it's 13. Starting at verse 17, and then we'll read through chapter 3, verse 5. I'm going to read this. 1 Thessalonians 2:17. But we, brethren, having been taken away from you for a short time in presence, not in heart, endeavoring more eagerly to see your face with great desire. Therefore we wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and again, but Satan hindered us. For what is our hope, or joy, or crown of rejoicing? Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ that is coming? For you are our glory and joy. Why did they want to go see him? What was their hope? What was their joy? The people, right? And their faith. Their faith in God that was standing firm. Let's continue reading in chapter 3. Therefore, when we could no longer endure it, we thought it good to be left in Athens alone, and sent Timothy, our brother and minister of God, and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you and encourage you concerning your faith, that no one should be shaken by these afflictions. For you yourselves know that we are appointed to this. For in fact, we told you before when we were with you that we would suffer tribulation, just as it has happened, and you know. For this reason, when I can no longer endure it, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter had tempted you, and our labor might be in vain. Paul really wanted to know how they were doing. But was it a selfish reason? He just longed to know how their faith was doing. It wasn't like, oh, I want to make sure they're strong, that way I can be strengthened. His heart was set on just loving them and just making sure that their faith was growing and they weren't sliding back. Making sure that they weren't getting down about the sufferings they were going through. He told them, you're going to suffer. And now he wants to know, how are you doing? Because he cared for them. And I guess, just using Paul as an example for us, when we go to worship services, and don't answer this out loud. When you go to worship services, when you go to a gospel meeting, when you come to college classes, who are you looking to benefit? Who are you thinking about when you go to those things? Yourself? I mean, I've been there in the past. Let's talk a little more. Let's go to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians 2. And if someone will read verses 14 through 18. Philippians 2, 14 through 18.
Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. Yes, and if I am being poured out as a drink offering in the sacrifice and service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. For the same reason, you also be glad and rejoice with me.
You know, I don't know how to accurately explain verse 17, but it says, if I am being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. If Paul is poured out, what is the idea of being poured out as a sacrifice?
You into yourself.
Who else did that? Christ, right? That's what Christ did, right? He showed it in his life, and he died on the cross. He was poured out. He gave all he could give, right? And that's what Paul's saying. He even if he has to give everything he can possibly give in a sacrifice, you know what? He's glad and rejoices. Why? Is it so that they'll think he's a good guy? Is it so that they'll tell everyone else what he did? Is that what it is? Someone answer?
No.
No, why?
If their faith is the sacrificial offering and he's being poured out onto that sacrifice, he's saying, then that sacrifice is going to be good with the Lord because their faith is so strong. He's okay with being poured out.
Right. It's for their benefit that he's being poured out. Why do you go to worship services? To take or to give? I'll just tell you personally, probably it was before Larry got here, I was going to take. I really was. And I've been working on it for a couple of years, I guess. I realized that, man, I didn't get encouraged by the singing. I mean, the song there just didn't do a good job. I mean, it was off pitch, and man, the lesson, I mean, come on, like, it just didn't apply to me. Come on, I mean, I need something different. The Lord's Supper, I didn't spend enough time on the Lord's Supper, okay? Well, I need more time. How selfish can I possibly be? That's not what it's about. If you read in Ephesians, we talked about it in the college class this morning. If you read in Ephesians, I think it was college class. It might have been lesson 9, I don't know. But, in Ephesians, it says speaking to one another, things like that. Or if you read about, in Hebrews, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together as the men or some, but exhorting one another. Purpose of the assembly, the purpose of speaking to one another, psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, is for one another. You don't see that. That is just throughout those passages, for one another. Don't forsake the assemblies of yourselves together. Exhort one another. It took me a while to realize, this isn't about me. This isn't, I mean, I need to be being encouraged. But you know what? It's not about me. And if you take it and you're just selfish about it, you miss the point. Is there any comments or anything like that? Just do that first part.
I got a comment. I always like the illustration of the church as a brick building. You know, Christ is the foundation that we build upon. And each member is like a brick. When you stack a brick wall, they overlap. And it's not the bricks themselves that are strong. It's the bond between them, the mortar, the bond between the members, if you will, that makes the whole structure strong. But they are stacked on top of one another also. So as you are supporting those above you, there are others below you being supporting you. And it's a real mutual relationship in the church.
Right. I think when we don't think of it as being mutual, it's because we really think of ourselves a little bit better, don't we? Which kind of brings me to the whole point of this talk. I pray that I never think I'm too good to serve somebody or to serve anyone I can. And my prayer is that we all just really focus on working and on serving. The title, I guess, of the talk was "Where Do You Work?" Because I work at the cabinet shop. Well, I work at school too, but I work. I mean, that's it, right? I mean, our work as a Christian is the biggest work we can have. And it's a work of service. And it's not just something we do when we give in a collection plate. It's not just something we do when we go visit somebody like Joel Black, things like that. Okay? Our work as a Christian, our service to God, and our service to one another is something that we should never let pride enter into that. I think we really need to think about Like, hey, I'm not perfect. I mean, do you have problems? Do you have any problems in your life? Do you have any struggles? Yeah, you do. I mean, I'll just tell you, you do. Yeah, I feel confident in that. I think everybody does. I know everybody does. I have more problems than I probably could even count, really. I think that from the attitude of thinking that we don't have problems comes I'm too proud. And we don't work anymore. And we look at service, and we look at worship service as worship service to me instead of to God and for other people. You know, the whole hospital, hotel idea as far as the church goes, what were we before we were baptized into Christ? Sinners, right? We were sick, weren't we? We were dying, okay? Thanks be to God, and through His grace, we were saved. How can you, and how can I, think of ourselves as better than someone else who is a sinner? Are we any better than that person? Am I any better than a murderer, honestly? No. No. There's sin. I mean, they have sin. I have sin. But yet, we distinguish those things. Even inside the church, I mean, there's people who might come in, and they got a lot of things they need to change in their life. And we look at them, and they're like, wow. They're dressing modestly right now. And this is just blatant. I can't believe that person would even come here today. I've thought it. I've heard it said. I can't believe that guy's up there leading singing. You know what he was doing the other day? What kind of attitude is that? It's not a Christ-like attitude, I don't think. What we need to do is we need to care, okay? And truth is, we're not any better than that person, okay? But if you care about them the way we should, we go to that person. Let's see. Doesn't matter where they came from. Talk about this real quick. The idea of growing up in the church. We'll go ahead and talk about that now. I think that the generation we live in is kind of been hurt by the idea of growing up in the church. How many of you have parents that are Christians? Raise your hand if you do. How many of you grew up going to church? And how many of you would say that you were raised in the church? How many of you were born a Christian? You were not raised in the church. That's my standpoint on that. It's my personal standpoint on that, okay? Because maybe it's a little bit of bitterness because I never knew how to answer that when someone said, you know, Were you raised in the church? I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. No. Yes. Maybe. I don't know. My grandparents are preacher. I mean, my grandfather. My grandparents. My grandfather. Oh, we got another issue. My grandfather's a preacher, so I went some. I went when I lived with him, but my parents don't go. I didn't go for a long time, and I started going when I was in high school or kind of middle school age. I never knew how to answer that about growing up in the church. I never could relate to people who said something about growing up in the church. And because of that, I didn't like that thought. Because I felt like it excluded me, okay? I'm just being honest about it. I think that there's a difference in growing as a Christian and growing up in the church. I think the attitude that comes with growing up in the church, this is what I've observed, is that people think that they deserve certain things. They're a little bit. They have more knowledge. They grew up in the church, so you know what? They were blessed a little bit better than other people. You know what that means? That means you have a lot more responsibility because you're blessed so much more, right? Or another way I like to think about it is, I hear people just talk about, you know, thanking God that we live in a country where we have the freedom of religion. So that is a blessing. I would agree with that. But I think that we read in the New Testament people were saying that, thanking God, and they're saying that they're blessed, they were counted worthy to go through trials, right? We don't look at that as a blessing, though. You look at people who were raised in broken homes, or the parents were, you know, drug dealers, things like that, and we feel sorry for those people. Those people's faith is probably stronger than most people who were raised in the church. instead of fight for it. Because they never had this idea of, well, I grew up in the church. I know what's right and wrong. No, they don't have that. Truthfully, I had that more than they did. And, I mean, I'm still not where I need to be as far as my spiritual life. I'm still not to the point where I can say, I don't have to work anymore. I'm not on that servant level. I'm a little higher. We're never going to get to that point, okay? Jesus died for all. Jesus came to who? He came to seek and to save the saved? Or who?
The lost.
The lost. He came for all, because all were lost, right? You know, our mission as a follower of Christ is to go to the sick and bring them to the great physician, right? Isn't that what it's supposed to be? But instead, since we're cured, thanks be to the great physician, we're cured, right? Why would we ever want to, like, not show them the cure? That's what I do. I don't know about y'all, that's what I do. I'm not, you know, telling people, hey, I know how to heal. I know how you can be healed. Or people come into the building, and instead of talking to them, I look over at them and I'm like, they just rolled in from the street. And I don't go talk to them. And that's shameful. Shame on me, you know? But I guess a lot of this is just a lot of things I've been thinking about lately, because I realize they need to change in my life. And it's at the base of it is just caring for others. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 9. Is there any comments or questions or anything? I guess I've kind of rambled a lot, but you don't have anything they thought of? Let's read Matthew 9, verses 9 through 13. Someone please read that.
As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting in the tax collector's booth, and he said to him, "Follow me," and he got up and followed him. Then it happened that as Jesus was reclining at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came up and were dining with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why is your teacher eating with the tax collectors and sinners?" But when Jesus heard this, he said, It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice. For I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners."
Jesus came to call the sinners, right? This is right after he has just called who to follow him?
Matthew.
And what was Matthew? A tax collector. And were they esteemed pretty high? Called someone who was looked down upon to follow him. And then he said, "I came for the sinners." If you think that Jesus came for the righteous, I don't think you've really felt the love of God and the love of Christ, because you don't realize where you were when you came to Christ. I've been there. At times I look back at when I was baptized and I think, do I really understand where, like, how sick and dying I was? That I was like this disgusting thing that had been tossed aside because I was in sin. And then Jesus came along and he picked me up and said, "I came for you. You're the lost sheep. You're the one that's sick. Let me heal you." I think I looked at myself as, I'm all right. I need to be baptized, though. That'll put me over the edge. That'll make me a real good person. Christ didn't come for the righteous. He came for the sinners. I guess what I wanted to point out about this was that, you know, we have no right to look down on anyone. We have no right to think we're better than anyone. We say the passage, you know, all of sin falling short of the glory. I think we say that to comfort one another, say, it's okay, all of sin and fall short of the glory. But I think the point of Romans 3, 23, when he says that, is not to necessarily just comfort everyone. If you look at the verse right before in verse 22 of Romans 3, there is no difference, there's no preference Okay? There's no preference. All have fallen short of the glory. All have sinned. It's not just this comforting thing. Oh yeah, alright, all have fallen short. It's like, all have sinned. Do you not know you have sinned? You have sinned. Don't look at these Gentiles, these uncircumcised, a different way than the Jews. Don't think that they're below you. Okay? You're all on the same level because you're all sinners. And so when we think that the church is for is a hotel where we can go and relax, I think we've missed the point of why we gather together. We gather because we're all sinners. And it's a hospital. It's for us to come and bring others to Christ. Okay? It's for us to be comforted by that mortar that is in between the bricks, our faith in Christ, right? Is there any other comments, or is there any comment or anything like that?
A couple of things. You know, you're talking about people whose parents weren't Christians, things like that, how they've had to find that for themselves, to find out the truth. And I think that while there is no distinction in the church, that you know, there's not slave or free, there's not, it doesn't matter what your parents were, we're all saved, we're all redeemed, we're all the same. There's also an added challenge for people whose parents or grandparents were Christians, because you know they had to find it for themselves, and so it was precious to them. But if you just grow up and you take it for granted, and like you said, you just go to church, and you know, I think everybody has to come to a point in their life where it's like, you know, why am I doing this? You know, is it because people expect it of me, or is it precious to me? Is it something that is important to me? So whether you're raised in the church or raised outside of the church or whatever, you know, we're all the same. There's just different challenges for the different groups, I think.
I would agree. I wasn't trying to bash people who have at one point said they were, or if you raise your hand, for saying that you grew up in the church, raised in the church. Because chances are, if I hadn't thought about it, I mean, I would have always raised my hand, or it might have been, everyone else is raising their hand. But I wasn't meant to be harsh about that. It's just, I'm just afraid of the mindset behind it and what comes from that attitude. It just makes it a little scary to me, because just looking around at a lot of the people and the attitudes for coming to worship services. So that's why I said it. But I think you're right. We all have struggles. I mean, everyone does. I mean, it might be different for one group of people or whatever, but we all have struggles. Luke 4:17-21 tells us that Jesus came to help those in need, to free the captive, and to heal the sick. Turn to Matthew 25. That was just another verse, I guess, to point that out about Jesus and his purpose for coming. Matthew 25. Long reading. I won't read the whole thing, though. Someone tell me verses 31 through 46. What is being talked about here? Anybody pick out something about that section of verses?
It's Christ talking about, if you don't offer so-and-so things to people on earth, you never get them from him.
Right. Y'all have something y'all are going to say?
It has the same thing.
Okay. Y'all don't hear this as an invitation, like Wednesday night kind of thing, like the whole depart from me, you know, I never knew you idea. That's scary, isn't it? Like, hearing that. It is scary, but for me, I think a little differently now. It's a motivation for me, because it tells me I need to be at work. It tells me that I need to be serving every opportunity I can, because what Jesus says is that if you do it to the least of these, you do it to me, right? Is that what he says? So it's not just a, you know, better do it. It's like, wow, I need to be doing this, because Jesus said, I'm doing it to him. I'm doing it for him. That's such a motivation, isn't it? I mean, do we not want to please our Savior? Do we not want to glorify him? Well, look out for other people. Help other people. Serve others. Serving and giving yourself to others, it's all part of your worship to God. It's all part of your service to God. We can't separate it and say, I have a service to God, service to other people. You know, I need to have God first, after that, others, and then myself, right? That's how I've always thought. But I think that if we read, let's turn to Matthew 22, verse 36 says, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." I think that it's interesting that it says the second is like it. How is it like it? How is the second commandment like that first one? Aren't they different? One is talking about service to God and putting God first. Another one is talking about putting others ahead of yourself. Of course, when you do one, you do the other, do you not?
You just said that if we help this one, then we're helping Jesus.
Right. But, I mean, I've always looked at that as two different things in my mind. And I think that's hindered how much I could have served. And it's made my outlook on other people be different in the church. And I need to change that. All right, now I guess, does anybody have any comments or questions about that so far? All right, well, I guess, yeah.
I totally agree with the whole, make sure that you put others before yourself. But just be careful. I know with people who have my personality who are very much like it, we tend to put people before us so much that we forget to do things for ourselves as far as our worship. What we need to do for ourselves to keep ourselves in line. And although helping people helps you do that, you know, I would hate to get to the end of the day and God say, "Well, you did anything for anybody else, what did you do for yourself? You forgot all about the service."
I'd say that I think you're right. I think that it all comes down to your heart. I think Paul could not have actually said what he said about what his joy and comfort and hope was. He couldn't have said it was the other people's faith if his heart wasn't right, could he? If he wasn't really devoted to God, he couldn't say that their hope and their joy was a comfort to him. Their faith was his. I mean, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. That their faith was his joy and comfort and hope. I think that we just need to make sure that we are devoted to God. But when we do that, our immediate thing is, how can I serve? I'm trying to do that, and it's really hard, I'll tell you. In prayers, I've always been one to pray about, let me pray about all these things I struggle with, all these other things. Have you ever prayed just for other people and not about yourself? It feels a little weird when you do it. I mean, to be honest. I think that just try that. You know, just take some time. I mean, I'm not saying that all your prayers are just about others, but try to just say in prayer about everyone you can think of that needs a little help, that needs some comfort, that might be sick. Maybe they just lost someone that they truly love. Just try to pray for others. You know, I guess one of the reasons I want to talk about this is because I had been approached with the idea that I had been being cliquish. And at first I was like, no, I'm not. And I think it's a natural reaction for all of us. And I still don't think that the accusation was completely like, you were doing this, you're getting things together, and you're intentionally not inviting others. But upon really thinking about it and really looking at, I guess taking a deep look at myself, I wouldn't focus on others. And this was recently. Had two people, separate instances, separate things, three, say something about it. Kind of made me a little sad because I don't want people to think that about me. But more importantly, I don't want people to feel that. The feel that they've been left out. It's a problem down here. And I don't know how to fix it other than say, think about other people a little more. That's really where this whole talk came from, I guess. And I started thinking about what we need down here. I tell you, one thing we need is we need to get over ourselves a little bit and start thinking about others. I have my friends that I really have a lot of fun with, and I have other people who I can talk to, but we don't really have much in common, though, right? Who cares? Maybe they need a friend. Maybe they need you to not go with your friends that night. Or maybe just don't immediately go to your, I'm not going to say click because, you don't want to hear me say click. Don't go to your group of friends that you really get along with. Don't go to them immediately after your services. Try one time. Pick someone out who you don't really know that well. I've tried to make it a point to talk to Joel Black a lot, or the Kickers. They really can use some encouragement, I think. Don't go and be selfish and just go to your friends. Yeah, you find comfort in it. Yeah, you get encouraged. You have a good time. What about other people? We're in the business of trying to help others and try to. We can't heal the sick, but we can sure show them the physician that can give them the comfort and give them the joy that they need. Let's see. Sorry, that's on your shoulder. One thing I think is a problem is our eyes aren't truly opened. I think that we kind of close off our mind to, and our vision is just about having fun and, oh, there's my person I'm going to have fun with, something like that, instead of saying, who needs me? Not that I'm so great, but who needs me because I want to serve? Let's turn to Galatians chapter 5. This will be the last passage. Galatians 5. Galatians 5, verse 13 through 15. If someone will read that, please.
For you are called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you're not consumed by one another.
I think we don't take heed to what Paul is saying here. We will end up in where it is in verse 15. I think there have been, Larry, we might not really believe what he says when he talks about all these congregations, but the congregations he's been at, the problems that they've had, things like that, because we don't see the problems down here, but I can guarantee you that people will leave and start attending somewhere else or stop attending, period, if we don't start just looking out for one another. Says you, verse 13, you've been called to liberty. You've been called to freedom, but what? You've been called to be free, but serve. I mean, that just sounds almost, that almost sounds dumb, doesn't it? It's like an oxymoron kind of thing, right? Like, you've been called to freedom, so therefore serve one another. That's what we're called to be as Christians, and if that's not what you want to be a part of, then I think your view of the church might be a little more like the hotel side than the hospital. And my suggestion is to change your attitude on it. That's what I had to do. I had to just take a deep look at myself and think, I got to make a change. I was talking to someone recently about, talks like this and things like that, or Wednesday night invitations, whatever, and it was kind of like, he said, we need to be more specific about what we need to do, about what we need to stop doing, or about what we need to start doing. Because if we're not specific, how are people really going to know? Why? Wednesday night, invitation was just, some corner or whatever, but it was just an invitation to make a change. This is a specific example of what we need to change. It all comes down to the heart. But specifically, make a change is, you need to start looking out for one another. Serve one another. And the whole motivation is because you are free. You're free. You're healed. Go help others. I like to keep talking about if there's any specific things that that we need to work on or whatever. I guess just the last thing I have written down is I would say there's work to do in the dark world that we try to keep away from in there. There's a lot of work to do out there. This is a little, I don't know if I got this from someone or, I don't know, I think a lot of times I just thought this up, like, when it worked, somehow it cut my hand off, I don't know, but like, said, I just thought, you know what, everyone that we see is just a soul that needs to be saved. It's a person who needs Jesus healing. Just start thinking about that. Everyone you see is a soul to save. Maybe they're already Christian, but they're still the soul that needs to be saved. There's still someone that needs some encouragement. There's still someone who can fall back into sin. And there's still someone who just needs Jesus in their life. So let's go to work and show all that there's a way to be healed from the disease of sin. It is a disease. And I guess this last question I have is, why would a sick person not want everyone around them to be healed? What happens if you're healed and then you're around sick people? Get sick again. So I'm not saying that selfish motivation so that you don't get sick again, you need to go help others, but it's just how it just makes sense. I mean, just being a little smart. I mean, if you've been healed, go help others be healed. And I think that's what we need to focus on more. Is there any comment, any passages that maybe y'all have thought of? Is there any specific things that we need to work on? Maybe they have to do with this, maybe they don't.
Think about like giving in the collection plate. And a lot of times we can think of like other stuff we can spend our money on and reasons to not give. But that can go along with the being selfless thing. Like you don't think about like that money goes into the church fund and it can benefit others. Like it goes into spreading the word to others out in the community. And so I think that goes along with the not being selfish thing.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
It's exactly like if you put $20 in and then the next day you want to go to a movie, you're like, oh, man, I put that $20 in yesterday. God didn't want that money because you weren't giving it generously. If you're thinking about it as in, I had to give it, I didn't really want to, but I had to, then it didn't really mean anything to God anyways.
I can't remember the passage. I think it's Psalm 86, I don't know. Sacrifices of God are broken and contrite heart, right? God doesn't necessarily want your animal sacrifices, okay? He wants your heart. Do what? 51? That was way off. That's basically what it says, I think. I think it goes right along with what you're saying. God just wants your heart. Is there anything else? Nobody has any other comments? What about things we can work on down here? Get specific with it.
I think it's like I would like to be better at working on, or that was bad way to phrase it. But as far as just like finding your own faith, like you talked about growing up in the church and stuff like that, I look at it and you think, like if you had two people, for example, one person grew up in the church and always just went to church every Sunday, every time the door was open, was at every service and everything, you know, but they may still have their parents' faith. But on the other hand, you have this guy who, you know, fell away for a while and kind of found what he was looking for and came back to the church, found his own faith. Eventually, that guy that fell away for a while is going to have a stronger faith because he has his own faith. And so for me, I'd really like to start, or I am, you know, just finding your own faith. And it's hard to do that just by doing it on your own kind of thing.
I think we're ashamed to say we're finding our own faith a lot of times. I mean, I'm not going to say I found it, because there's still clearly things that I'm trying to work on, things that I'm realizing, man, this, I need to work on this, you know, or I don't know about this. I need to learn about it. I need to look to God for how I should live, for what I believe on this topic. But I think we're a little too afraid or ashamed. We just don't want to admit that we're finding our own faith sometimes. So, I mean, you're definitely not. I mean, I think everybody in here is probably at that point where they're like, we're all still finding our own faith.
I think another thing that goes along with that is people, most of, you know, teenagers our age, especially down here, that go to church with us, they, you know, they did grow up with Christian examples. You know, they went to church, like Tyler said, whenever they could, whenever their parents took them. And then you grow up and you move off to college and you listen to other people's story. And I remember one of the first times I heard Larry talking about it, you know, he was later in life when he, before he became a Christian, you know, and found his faith, and he uses stories to tell us everything. And I know from like previous examples, people who have been raised in the church are like, oh, you know, that person found it later, you know, I'm sure they had a pastor. I mean, that person is probably, we're probably more at a disadvantage than that person because they went through struggles, you know, they, like Tasha, they found it themselves. Whereas us, you know, we're just been like told, okay, put your church clothes on, we're going to church, yada, yada, yada. And then as college students, you move out on your own and your parents expect you to be at church. But it's almost like you should, like you've been saying the whole night, you know, you should want to go for others, not just yourself. But it shouldn't be a, well, I don't want this to get back to mommy and daddy, that, you know, stuff like that. But it should be because you want to see others, you want to check up on others and stuff like that. So it just seems like not, or it's a very big thing that people do to look down on others as far as, well, you know, well, I was baptized when I was 13, you were baptized when you were 20, you know, something's got to be different. And it's probably, you know, we're more at a disadvantage than they are.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is we think, oh, I'm sorry. And I mean, yeah. Your reaction, like someone says, yeah, you know,
or something had to be wrong.
Right, I mean, but, I mean, I know, I mean, that's, right when you said that about Larry, you know, one of the things could have, someone could think, right when they, you know, right when they hear his story about, wow. Glad that y'all missed the whole thing. I'm just kidding. One of the things about, you know, like Larry, you know, he can say how he was in college, things like that, before he ever was baptized, things like that, and they say, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I guarantee he's not sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it that says when it says God is faithful and will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you can bear? Is that what it is? When you are being tempted, things like that, count it a blessing. I mean, I guarantee you, people who go through things and they come out on the other side, they realize, you know what? Not that the strength was in myself, but God knew that I could go through it. God had faith in me that I would lean on Him to carry me through whatever. Even if it's that no one you knew was a Christian. God knew that you could come through it. And that you'd be stronger in the end, probably. I think someone on the couch had something.
It really, truly is a terrifying thing to look at yourself and look at where you've been throughout your life and your faith and where you've stood and how you've, you know, maybe even argued with people. It's terrifying to look at that and think, maybe I've been wrong. Maybe I need to reevaluate. Maybe I need to look at this again. Maybe I've been wrong for however long it's been. It's really, really, really scary, and there are a lot of tears and heartache that go into that. But like you said, God won't let you go through that if He doesn't think that you can handle it. And I think it's your responsibility to Him and to others and to yourself to really, truly look at yourself and look at your beliefs and your faith and decide whether or not you're doing it because it's what's right or you're doing it because it's what you think everyone expects of you. And I'm saying this from personal experience. It's necessary. You have to. Not because everyone says that you need to. For your faith and for your salvation, you have to.
Amen.
Sorry.
When the letters were written in the New Testament, do you know how long some of the people had been Christians? Have any idea?
You know, some of the elders that were appointed were, you know, just baptized. Well, not just baptized, but
I mean,
practically righteous.
The whole church was like just baptized and pretty
much. So when it talks about being a babe in Christ, that was like everybody that was a Christian back then, wasn't it? And we look at people today and we think, oh, they're babes. Don't even look down on them. It says that babes, all they can handle is the pure milk, right? They can't even take on solid food. And we look down on those people. I think if you look down on those people, you're a babe. You still are. And that's sad. That's sad because I know that I've been there. I mean, I don't want to say it, but I guess I'm still there because I struggle with it. We look down on people too much. People that are part of the church down here. This isn't meant just to be like, you know, people talk about local, universal. You have the local church, and you have the universal church. This applies everywhere, but in particular, in the group where you attend, don't look down on babes. Either you're still there or you've been there. I mean, you can help each other to start being able to take on the meat, or maybe you know, you're stronger because you realize you need to serve them. I think that is a really good judge on your faith growing, is if you realize it's not about you and you need to serve other people. Yeah, I asked if there was any other issues or anything. I mean, it didn't have to necessarily be related to what we talked about. If nothing else, just ideas for later talks and things like that. I mean, what do we need down here?
Evangelism, like spreading the gospel to other people. You know, I was thinking about that. We have so many classes where we try to invite people, we try to get other people there, but it's like, it's mostly about, you know, us, like the ones that are already Christians. Like, that's something I know, like, sometimes, like, I'm just, like, sitting in the student center or something, you see all the people, and it's just, I don't even know where to start. Yeah. And you gotta know that, you know, everybody needs Jesus, and, you know, it's like, you know, like you were talking about, I have the cure, I'm gonna, all these sick people, but, I don't know the answer, maybe some kind of organized effort or individual effort or whatever. But.
Do you think that it's easier to be accepting of people who we would meet like that and to bring them in to worship services, to the church or whatever, for people to look at them and be like, let me help them? Do you think it's easier to do that than it is for us to look at people who we're already around that are Christians and help them?
Maybe.
I mean, I think it might be. That's sad. I mean, we shouldn't be. I mean, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say along the same lines of, you know, helping people that are already Christians. I just, speaking from recent and also some experiences I had this past summer, was, you know, a lot of people, like, especially this age, when you're friends with people who are already Christians and you see them making mistakes, a lot of people expect you to not say anything to them because they're Christian. So I would just encourage everybody down here to just pull together, and if you see somebody messing up or whatever, it could be me, you know, if I mess up, I want somebody to say something to me. And I think that we should all have the attitude of, if somebody does say something to you, hey, you know, you really could come to church more often, or hey, we missed you Wednesday night, don't take offense. We're just trying to, you know, strengthen the mortar in between the bricks and just really pull together and be a group, and keep each other healed so that nobody else gets sick. So I know it gets tough when people are already Christians, because you're like, well, they're a Christian, so I don't really need to say anything. But if we plan on staying Christians, then we all need it. So I think that, not just here, but everywhere, I think that could be something that especially young people could work on.
I mean, this whole talk came from someone pointing out a flaw of mine. I mean, and I'm thankful for that, for those people that did that, because I needed to change. And they cared about me enough to point it out. But I'm too scared to point out other people and help them, point out things that they struggle with and help them. It shouldn't be like that anymore.
One thing people who have been in the church all their lives, it seems really easy to just invite someone to a Sunday morning worship service. Just someone, like a friend that you met in class or something. And we don't put ourselves in their shoes thinking, if they haven't been to church all that often, a Sunday morning worship service might be really a big deal for them, and awkward, they don't know what to do, stuff like that. So the Bible studies that we held, like tonight, it might be easier to invite them to one of these first, and then after they get going in a regular, like a home Bible study where it's much more comfortable to them, then invite them to a Sunday morning worship service. It seems kind of backwards, but personally, like, you know, I've studied with a couple friends of different denominations, and even though I've grown up in the church, you know, going to a church building all the time, just actually going into someone else's worship service, it was really awkward. But actually, if I go to like a home Bible study, it's much more comfortable. You feel more open to talk, to discuss, and to learn. If you're obviously we're all learning, but if you're the newcomer, mm-hmm. So suggestion.
That's good. Anything else we need to work on? Evangelism? That's one of the big ones, I guess.
Yeah, and like, I guess the main thing that was on the way here, you know, I stopped and bought a drink, and I went to a gas station, and the clerk, he asked me, like, why are y'all dressed up? I said, I just got out of church. He asked me where I went, and I told him, and I just thought it'd be a good idea to invite him. I was like, yeah, you know, we'd like to have you sometime if you want to come by. And he said, oh, well, I got a couple of churches, you know, right around my house. And my response is pretty much, okay, cool, have a good night. And, like, after I walked outside, I was like, I don't think that's how I should have handled that. And, like, I think of, like, 2 Corinthians 5, talking about being ambassadors for Christ, how we should be, like, imploring people and appealing to people. It's like, you know, we should really be, like, fighting to, not to push it on somebody, but to, you know, to help them see, you know, what they need. It's more than just, hey, should you come by sometime? That'd be cool.
I'm out of one of my teachers, like, he talked about his faith a little bit the very first day of class. So I thought it was a little odd. So when we had the meeting, I was like, all right, I'm going to invite him. You know? So I got one of the postcard things, whatever. And I walked up to him after class, and he kind of walked out of the classroom. So I just followed him, and I started talking to him, and I gave it to him. And he said, well, I'm right where I am right now. I was like, oh, okay, well, where do you go? He's like, I go to Church of Latter-day Saints and stuff like that. And immediately, I mean, I was just like, oh, wow. I'm over my head right now. Like, I don't know where to start. Like, and he started talking to me. He started encouraging me to go to the student one that's on college. I was like, well, I mean, okay. I was like, you got to kind of convert me? Like, I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what to do. I was like, I thought if I called Larry, he'd be like, Larry, get over here. I'm louder, help me. You know, but, I mean, I didn't know what to do. I mean, so I just left it, you know, I just dropped it. I mean, I talked to him for a little bit about it, but he seemed pretty content, so, okay. But if it's a sick person who doesn't say they're sick, I mean, does that make them any less sick?
No, they're sick.
Yeah, it does. So that a big...
I was just going to make one quick comment I just kind of thought of. Like, a lot of times if you're a weaker Christian, it's hard to approach someone who already has a faith because they're going to know more about it than you are. You know, so a lot of times it's intimidating to walk up to, you know, like, the guy you're talking to, because, I mean, it might just be that he could just, you know, throw his Bible at you with his interpretation and you have no idea what to do with it. So if you're, you know, if you have a weaker faith, you can talk to people who maybe don't even have a church they go to or aren't even religious at all, you know? I mean, that's something that you could do, just having a weaker faith, you know?
I think it's important to remember who gives the increase on things in our life. And if we ever, you know, Lord willing, we will be trying to bear some fruit, we'll be trying to spread the seed and try to bring people to Christ so they can be healed. I mean, the one that does the healing, the one that's, you know, giving the increase, it's not us anyway. So I think that helps out a lot with that thought.
Kind of going along with what he said, it's kind of scary to think about, like, all the stuff that we believe just because our parents told it to us. Like, just certain stuff. I remember, like, we were growing up, we always had to, like, wear our shirts when we were swimming and just stuff like that. And so, like, it's just stuff like that. Like, we were just always told that. And we never really, like, studied for it on our own, came to our own conclusion from it. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're so intimidated to try to talk to somebody because we don't have a basis for it other than our parents told it to us. So I think it would help in that area to kind of reach our own conclusion about that kind of stuff.
Definitely. Just real quick going off of that, I think that we need to open our minds a little bit and realize that everything we do in our life matters, does it not? I mean, what aspect of our life is a Christian, what aspect is like, you know, has nothing to do with Christ? There's no distinction there, okay? Everything we do matters. What you do when you're working, what you do when you're at home, what you do when you go to the beach, it's all, I mean, your life as a Christian is your life. And so because of that, I think we need to just think about everything we do and just really think about everything we do and decide if it's truly right or wrong. I can't really answer that for you. I mean, that's something you need to do by yourself.
Part of finding your own faith, aside from your parents, is when you study to come to your own conclusion. It might be different than what your parents told you. And then you might have to actually sit down with your parents and study it together, and then you still might have differing opinions on it. And that's okay in some areas. And that's actually a really hard part of finding your own faith, is that you might disagree with what you've been taught your entire life. And I think that's why people would rather just stick with their parents' faith, because it's what they've grown up with, that's what they know. And it's scary to think that maybe your parents taught you wrong. Even if they're hardcore studying Christians, they might have taught you wrong. So it's kind of hard to think about that.